had the right to be who owned the land. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? This is Free Radio. This is 96.3 FM on your radio dial. I'm Robert Norris, and we're more or less headed for 2.5 hours of the usual interviews, civil rights concerns, wild and crazy call-ins, and, of course, the endless theme song suggestions. So don't want to spend a lot of time on that today. Hopefully, we can actually come up with a working committee that can consensus on an appropriate theme for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. You can always tune in. You can always give in your suggestions if you'd like. Send in your CD discs, tapes, and we can even bring you in the studio with a guitar. I was actually thinking it would be nice to get Phil Free or Skidmark Bob to do a special kind of guest edition of some of their fine street songs here in Santa Cruz, since that's the real local stuff. That's the real deal. That's real people who are or have been earning their living on the streets at different times. And their eyes, ears, and bodies have been there while things have been happening, and they were intimately involved in what went on and what went down. So, thank you for tuning in today, and if you want to call in and be a part of this, it's pretty easy. 427-3772 is the number, and its lines are open. A couple of quick announcements before we begin an interview. I'm going to be playing a long interview. Richard Edmondson, who is the author of a new book called Rising Up, which I've mentioned before on the air. He's also the founder of San Francisco Liberation Radio, along with Free Radio Berkeley, probably the oldest radio, free radio or micro-power radio station in this current wave of free radio stations. Others have been around longer in some respects. Dunifer and his new technology, Stephen Dunifer of Free Radio Berkeley, who began manufacturing free radio kits that people could assemble quickly and cheaply, kind of ushered in this new era. That's my perception of it. And San Francisco Liberation Radio, which began and still continues in Richard Edmondson's house, is a result of his work with Food Not Bombs and the incredible harassment that that organization suffered, the hundreds and hundreds of arrests that they suffered while continuing to put out food for people. They still do so to this day. Santa Cruz chapter of Food Not Bombs, which is autonomous. This is an anarchist, that is to say, local grassroots group. Anarchist, for those who don't know, it means self-governing. It's a group that doesn't take its orders from on top. Every individual is their own master, and its decisions are arrived at by consensus, I believe, although I don't think Food Not Bombs is actually meeting much these days. I haven't heard of any scheduled meetings, but it is available as a resource to homeless people and poor people and hungry people and everybody. Saturday, I believe it meets at the town clock, and I believe it has two other feedings on two other days at San Lorenzo Park. And I may be a bit behind on that. For people who want more information, give a call to 425-3345. That's for our Santa Cruz bombs. Somebody's calling in now.
Hi, it's Free Radio.
Just to see if I heard it right. Wasn't there an issue with San Francisco bombs where if you had a ladle, you would be arrested. But you could, they brought the food out, but they just had to leave the food there because they weren't a licensed
kitchen.
Serving. Oh, excuse me, a licensed serving caterer.
The deal was actually they would grab people as they tried to bring the food out. It was
under sanitary, under health and safety.
Yeah,
things,
no,
right?
It wasn't even serving the food. It was even preparing it or bringing it out there. But there were times when, in order to use a different strategy, Food Not Bombs up there, you know, had people serve themselves. And then there were other times when servers were dragged away when people had to serve themselves. But usually the cops would take the food.
And you know what's back
at the same time.
You know what's back afterwards about that is that they claim it's for health and safety, for sanitation, sanitation reasons. You know, keeping that one person with the glove on their hand.
Yeah, go to the dumpsters instead.
And instead, just have a bunch of people walk up and grab the lid and open it and have to serve themselves. And make a mess, and you know, you want to have one big server, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even the camps in Gulag, and in the German camps, had the decency to have that somebody serve the people, you know.
Plus they had bands as people marched off to the concentration camps, which was pretty good. The gas chambers. Yeah, I.
People were arrested during the Russian. Arrested a lot of people. They're for feeding people, man. It's nothing. It's nothing new. It's just with a different name.
Well, I'm glad that at the moment it's not happening in Santa Cruz. Though it's also true that there's no high-profile feeding operation downtown anymore, like Feed the People or Food Not Bombs used to be. And I guess you know, some people feel that that's a good thing because it should really be more of a charity service, or it should be something that, you know, is low profile and actually feeds people rather than. Capital by showing people that poverty is visible.
I hope the people that stop and keep other people from eating choke on their damn sirloin steak.
Well, thank you very much, caller.
And that was one of our regulars. Thank you for giving us your thoughts on it. Perhaps another regular calling in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
I heard you talking about Food Not Bombs. Actually, I saw them serving at the clock tower yesterday.
So that is, they are serving on Saturdays.
Yeah.
You know what time they serve?
Well, I knew it used to be 2:30, but I was down there around 4:30 and they were serving.
Yeah, I think they also either served one or two other days, as I was saying, at San Lorenzo Park, or they did about 8 months ago when I was working with a group called...
Yeah, I know they used to be over there, but...
A group called ROAR, Restore Our American Rights of Campers. We kind of, you know, ranged our schedule around Food Not Bombs, and, you know, they show up with vegetarian food on bikes, and they're great, or they did, and I'm hoping still do. I think Paul is a man who covers that. And again, his number is 425, or Food Not Bombs' number is 425-3345 if people want to get in touch and donate food or money or want to volunteer and or just want to know what's going on. So, if I'm not mistaken, you are the notorious Steve Argue, the man who spent seven months in jail for defending a woman and her child about a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Well, how could you do such a thing? And what are you up to now?
What am I up to now?
Yeah.
Well, I do my radio show every Saturday.
At noon, noon to 3.
Yep, and I'm doing habitat restoration work for endangered species during the week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Any reports on other activists that you want to, you know, stuff going on in San Jose or San Francisco you think people should know about or upcoming events?
Well, San Jose, something happening over there. I don't really want to talk about it until I really know for sure what I think was going to happen. So.
Okay.
But in terms of the local sleeping ban, I was talking to a homeless man yesterday at the Food Not Bombs, and he had a suggestion he wanted relayed to city council members in terms of suggesting instead of, you know, I mean, he's for completely getting rid of the sleeping ban too, but these politicians are refusing to take any action on that. He was suggesting them possibly taking up a decriminalization of sleep, making it possible for the police to make people move along who are sleeping and take up their camp. You know, he was suggesting, like, give people a period of time to move their camp, and if they don't move their camp over, like, I don't know, he was suggesting a month, but, you know, any type of time would be relief for people, like a week or whatever, for people to move their camps and then possibly be fined would be a great relief for people, not to have to worry about getting a fine without being warned for sleeping or camping. And
did he have any reports about attacks on camps recently or tickets?
He didn't, no.
Have you heard anything about that yourself?
I haven't. I've been living in Capitola, and I haven't been talking to as many people on the street lately, and I actually haven't heard anything, and I had heard, like, a lot of tickets had been down.
You mean there were less tickets than before?
Less tickets, but I don't know. I don't really know, because the last few months I've been off the street, and I've been not around a lot of the service centers talking to as many people. I have seen the police harassing people, though, and, you know, I mean, like I called in a while back about how they were sitting at this corner where a lot of homeless people cross the street to go to the homeless service center and giving people tickets there on the light at Mission and
so
River
a couple
street.
Weeks ago, or
what's that?
Several weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, so I mean, I'm sure the police are still up to their old tricks, you know, and I saw them there doing that, harassing homeless people. So.
Well, I expect, of course, my 10% cut of your lawsuit on the newspaper sales stuff, which were, for the folks who don't remember, there was an incident, I guess now it's, gosh, 2.5 years ago in front of New Leaf, the day after you and others were involved in a Stolen Lives, a John Dine Memorial event at the town clock. Police arrested you in a relatively brutal fashion for selling a street newspaper in front of New Leaf Market, although they later changed the story to different things like blocking the sidewalk, resisting arrest.
Now they're back to saying it was for selling a newspaper.
And they're claiming that the original arrest was valid in spite of a specific exemption in the municipal code that says you don't have to get a permit to sell a newspaper. Or actually, it's to display a newspaper, and they're claiming that display does not mean sell.
Exactly.
So it's interesting that they would say this when for the last 2 years they have allowed people to sell, not just display newspapers without bother, and now that they're being taken to court on the issue because they severely bothered you, they want to claim that that was never the case, that you were never allowed to sell papers.
Right.
And I think what we need to do is get about 10 people downtown selling papers and have them, you know, arrest everybody or not arrest everybody, cite everybody or not cite everybody, not use one standard for one person, one standard for another, change the laws and rules around.
Right. Well, they say, see, where they're in a tight spot with that, in order for them, for the city lawyer to defend themselves, they have to claim that it was illegal because it says right in the police arrest report that I was arrested for selling newspapers. So...
Well, that's the thing I took three times to the Citizens Police Review Board saying he was arrested for selling a street newspaper, and 2 months before, Chief Belcher had specifically written in a letter to Anthony Douglas, another street vendor, that he apologized, in essence, to him for having him arrested for having him cited for selling a street paper.
Right.
He was never actually taken into custody. And given that fact, and given, you know, what the police department then did in a whole series memos back and forth was they said to the CPRB, oh no, it wasn't you know, arresting a street newspaper, it was obstructing the sidewalk and putting your finger in the police officer's face and saying, what's my name? My name is Fuck. Although I never heard anybody else say that you said that. That was the claim they made. Made numerous claims,
yeah,
on their whole, you know, on their form in their response. But the basic way that this whole thing is being manipulated is that, you know, you try to complain to the police review board about police misconduct, and they claim, oh, he was doing other things. You take it to court to claim, okay, you claim we're doing other things, but the police report says it was selling a newspaper, what's going on here? Then they go back to the original story. And they have the legal resources to do this seemingly endlessly, and until we get people on the other side who are willing to spend either time or money to fight it, it's a difficult and lonely battle. It's kind of like a tiny voice in the wilderness. How are you feeling out there, tiny voice?
Well, I don't know. In terms of this, a lot was gained immediately afterwards in terms of the police backing off from harassing people who were selling newspapers.
And I think they still are backing off. I haven't heard of anybody else told not to sell newspapers.
Right.
So this is just, this is a unique circumstance. They're trying to claim they're doing this, but they're not. They're trying to claim there's a rule against selling papers, but they aren't enforcing it against anyone else. They're just using it to defend themselves in a civil lawsuit.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was, at one point, about half a year ago, I was selling a newspaper, and one of the hosts told me I couldn't do it and said it very loudly, and he called for backup, and a whole number of police came and met him down the street, and they were getting ready to arrest me, according to a witness that was listening in on them. And but then he got word not to, and that I was right, and that it wasn't illegal to sell newspapers. And he came back and very loudly said that to me, apologizing me to very, very loudly, you know, and saying that I'm doing this so loud, this apology so loud, I'm doing it as loud as what I said before to show that you were right, you know. So there was one instance where they did try to stop me, but then
I hope that becomes part of your lawsuit, that they had come to the conclusion that it was legal, and suddenly months later they're going to come back with an argument that it's not. I mean,
right. And then and then in terms of getting a license, a man went in, tried to get a license to sell a newspaper into the town hall, and was not given any information on how to do that, and was instead given information on when it's legal to panhandle.
I actually talked to two people who tried to do that, and I think one of them was the man you mentioned, mm-hmm. and they were told that there was no procedure for getting a permit for anything except selling food, and that was something about, you know, maybe you're allowed to sell food from these booths or under certain circumstances, and that in order to get that kind of a permit, or you had to get some sort of special dispensation from city council, if I understand correctly. So in essence, there is no process. I guess what we were asking.
Then that's a pretty deep violation of rights in terms of the fact that the corporate newspapers, the Sentinel, the Mercury News, all these other newspapers are allowed to distribute their newspapers. They've got boxes all over where they sell their newspapers right on the street,
mm-hmm.
and so they're discriminating against street newspapers and socialist and anarchist newspapers, alternative newspapers, that don't have those boxes.
It's also a discrimination.
Clear violation of free speech.
I think it's a discrimination against homeless people, because Street Spirit, the paper you were selling, you were selling several papers, but that certainly was one of the papers you were selling,
right.
is a paper that's sold by homeless people as an alternative to panhandling so they can make money and put out information about homeless civil rights struggles. And that, I think, is a... It's not so much the content of the paper that the authorities object to, though no doubt they don't really agree with it. It's the idea of homeless people in visible places causing a blemish on the, you know, Carmelish, pure street downtown, the Pacific Avenue. That's my thought on that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the ideas in it as well, you know, that homeless people are human beings, that the police, you know, there's articles in there about police conduct against homeless people, articles about you know, the rights of homeless people, opposing the sleeping ban, and various things that the authorities don't like either. And then on top of that, there was the demonstration that had just happened the day before for Happy John Dine.
Back in 1998 in November.
Yeah, just before I got arrested, my newspaper, my picture was in the Sentinel that day on the second page, standing beside two of the newly elected city councilmen at the time, Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone.
Their last appearance against police abuse.
Right, and that was at a demonstration of about 100 people. They were there calling for a stronger review, which they've never followed up on.
Oh, quite the opposite, yeah.
And I was there calling for the firing of the entire police force and starting over, and bringing out a lot of the facts of the case, along with a lot of other activists who spoke out there. But my picture was right there in the newspaper, and I think that's part of what made me a target that day, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that for those who want Street Spirit, it is now, the new March issue is available. You can give a call to 423-HOP, 423-4833, and it's also available at the Homeless Services Center and at the community Page Smith Community House, which I'd be able to pick it up probably Monday or Tuesday. Or just look for the car with all the bumper stickers and ask me if I'm around. I'd be happy to pass on. This is a paper which people who are homeless or recently homeless are allowed to sell without cost, although I think if you get the first 10 free and after that it costs you a dime, and you get to sell them for a dollar each, so it's a pretty good rate of return for you. So, and how, you know, I expect you to be selling some papers too, Steve, for heaven's sake. Let's not say that the police have driven you from your newsy spot, man.
Oh, no, they haven't. I've sold some off and on. I haven't been selling any papers real recently, but I think getting out various alternative newspapers, including Street Spirit, is another important medium for getting out news, like free radio. Mm-hmm. Good thing for people to do.
Anything else going on you think we should know about? Anything coming up?
Not for me to announce right now.
You heard about this Reclaim the Streets party coming up Saturday, March 17th, the town clock at 2 p.m.?
I have heard about it. In fact, that flyer in there was slipped to me by someone.
What is this? Any details on this? It says no more police brutality, no more homeless harassment, no more yuppie crap. Take the power back, wear a mask, RTS, Reclaim the Streets. And there's an anarchist symbol through the word party. What is this? What is this?
I know nothing about it.
You know nothing. Fine. A likely story, Steve. All right, well, anybody who knows something, please call in immediately or contact your local police department.
Oh, no. Okay.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, bye.
So, yeah, that week there's going to be a number of things happening, not only on Saturday the 17th, but on Monday the 19th, the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project is having a five-hour shindig. They're going to be talking about criminalization of the poor and organizing against it at a sort of a Northern California-wide meeting. It was going to be hosted at Becky Johnson's house, but it's being moved to a wider, broader place. I think it's going to be catered so that there will be Joe Schultz slurpin' soup available, or some other tasty thing from India Joe Schultz, previously of India Joe's, now his own caterer. For more information on that, the event will be from 9 to 2 on March 19th. Give a call to 423-HUFF, and we can give you the exact location. It's on Nobel Street, I believe. I don't have the exact number here, but I will be announcing it at a future show, and everybody is invited, particularly those concerned with civil rights. It is an organizational meeting, and we're trying to organize. You know what they say? Even though they have slain the sleeping ban repeal movement for the moment, you don't mourn, you organize and resurrect and proceed. There's also the Monday morning group, which meets. That's previously called the Mainstream Advocates, a group involving Michael Schmidt, Joe Schultz, Ann Alper, Bonnie Moore, Lydia Blanchard, a bunch of folks. Open to the public at the Baker's Square restaurant on Ocean Street every Monday morning at 8 o'clock for all you early birds. That's tomorrow morning. Come on down if you want to see what's cooking around their efforts to get the sleeping ban in front of the community and get the community mobilized to make sure that this time council doesn't duck it. This time we get rights for people. This time, whether it be through lawsuit or initiative or a mass protest or direct action or whatever the method, and again, that remains to be determined by people who come to these meetings, that there is a change in the status of homeless people so that no longer will you be given a $54 ticket for sleeping. When in Santa Cruz there is no legal place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to sleep at night. And instead we have a law that criminalizes them, drives them out of town, drives them out of sight, makes it unsafe for women. As we talked about some weeks ago, Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women has come out against that in a letter to the city to no avail. Still, the established politicians such as Marty Wormhout, Tim Fitzmaurice, our mayor, or our emperor as I like to call him, have been criticized for doing. Like to call this, you know, this is something that they insist on keeping in place. Although they say they're very concerned about homelessness. Oh yeah, they want to do lots about homelessness. But in the meantime, $54 fine if you sleep at night. Here's a call.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Oh, we didn't start the fire, but the rock is burning and it's turning. Oh, we didn't start the fire. That's for V-Man.
Hey, well, listen, I think we could use you for a re-recording, kind of bring it up into the 90s. Well, we gotta get some new lyrics for that tune. It's a little old and out of date, so I think we need to talk about the Santa Cruz events, and I expect you to write some new lyrics, and you and I can do a kind of a combined singing.
Well, we didn't start the fire?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
What do you got? Well, I mean, what's with you in that song?
You know,
you just can't let it go no matter what. Well, you want to rewrite it?
It burns a lot of people up. It's true, you know. But I got to point out that we didn't start the fire, so.
Well, I still think Bald Confusion by Temptations would be the best of that.
Right. Well, do you have any reports from the senior side of town, I should say, the trailer park city, and that the situation with Capitola, rent control, and life in a, well, out there.
Nothing, you know, I haven't heard nothing about the, we still have rent control.
In a trailer park?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the lowest rent control in the state of California.
But we should turn the entire city into a trailer park, and we could all get rent control. That might be the one way to go.
Well, I think it'd be better off as a reservation myself.
Well, it probably already is a reservation, except that,
where the socialist capitalist, Gordon McRocken.
Well, socialism.
Read that newspaper article?
I actually have that article in today's Sunday Sentinel about socialism, capitalism, and
okay, like how socialism, capitalism can rub weenies or something.
Well, they can at least claim to. I don't know what you got really. You got some strange imitations and some interesting posing going on. Well, I will take into consideration your usual pungent criticism of my theme song. Anything else you want to talk about?
I figure we can just have that song playing in the background, just chat about the weather for the next.
I'm going to work on that. I'll put it on since you are making a request.
Yeah, I'll dedicate to V-Man. No, I left a voicemail message last night about Bill Gates and 96.3 being a Bill Gates pirate radio.
I noticed V-Man is giving you lots of airplay in the last hour or two, and I think that shows that he's really sentimental for your return to the air here. He wants you back in the station, possibly with a beer or two and a little partying.
He's talking about so much, think he wants to marry me or something.
Well, I don't know about that. I can't speak for his preferences there, but perhaps the V-Man will call in with some thoughts. Perhaps not, since this is a show about civil rights for poor people, not
ex-radio
broadcasters.
That song he played, though, I thought was better than We Didn't Start
to
Fire.
But I really think that people should consider, you and others should consider starting a second radio station, because there is...
I love that.
Well, you know, then what you should do is sit down at a table or look for a grant from a group and get enough money together, and then just, it's not very much, what, $500 to $1,000 should do it. You got to pay the rent or do it in somebody's house, but then you can do a second radio station. Then you wouldn't have all these, you know, trying to wedge in a comment or two in this pathetic "We Didn't Start the Fire" scene. You know, it's really because you obviously have a passion for radio broadcasting, and you know your focus is different than Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It is a little funner than TV, I guess.
There you go.
I don't have to go in there with 12 people. I just got to go in with a 12-pack.
Yeah, well, there you go. And you get some students involved, you know. I mean, I continue to wonder why the students haven't come up with a radio station. Maybe it's some Spanish language folks involved.
Well, they got their KZSC.
Well, that's not really their KZSC. That's a sort of a bureaucratic run, difficult to get into station. I mean, in some respects, it doesn't have the freedom that Free Radio Santa Cruz does. You could, you know, I mean, it's time for Free Radio Santa Cruz 2 in Santa Cruz. Overtime. I mean, I think that there's plenty of room.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah, like a sister station, you're right.
Yeah, definitely. Or, you know, a mother station, or a daughter
station.
I don't care, whatever you got. Let's get a station.
Well, I was talking to Skid Mark Bob, but we're going to take over KZSC on 4x4s.
Oh, really?
No,
well, I won't be a part of any
Skid
kind
Mark
of conspiracy in the air. I'll tell you.
I don't know what Merlin's talking about. All right, man, I'm going to let you go.
All right. If you see anything interesting going on, you think that bears on civil rights for poor people, either indoors or outdoors, please call me back.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. But we didn't start the fire, and we are, however, on the air here, and you can be too. 427-3772 is the phone number, and it's time for you to call in and get on the air. But again, try to focus on some of these topics that we're interested in, namely basic civil rights and issues around the sleeping ban, rent control, how people are treated by organizations as a consequence of their being poor, people, you know, in businesses, how they treat folks who are coming in. Anyway, here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on the air. Or you were on the air. Hello? Hey there, caller. Call back if you can. I'm sorry I was a little slow on the uptake. We're going to get Sigu shortly, as I promised half an hour ago, into the Richard Edmondson interview. And I was talking about that. Edmondson is a San Francisco Liberation founder, and he still broadcasts. He designs programs that are broadcast on other free radio stations, and he's also been a long-term supporter of Food Not Bombs. He's been arrested a number of times, as have many of us, with that organization. And Food Not Bombs is still under some attack. I mean, we were able to secure it a pretty significant safety space when I went to jail in 1996 up in San Francisco, and Food Not Bombs fed on the steps of the
jail every morning. As I stayed that month in jail back there in the summer, and I think as a consequence after that, for several years, there were no arrests. Then they started arresting people again. I think it was either in the fall of 99 or the fall of 2000. I'm a little unsure about that at the moment, and it was around the election campaign. It must have been in the fall of 2000, and a hunger strike by Sister Bernie Galvin and others turned that back, and there haven't been any arrests that I'm aware of in San Francisco since, although Hoodna Bombs in other cities has been harassed. So let's hear more. Let's actually get directly into this long-promised and now about to be delivered Richard Edmondson interview. Richard, as I said, has written a great book, which I've requested the library cover, get a hold of, I should say, and make available. It's called Rising Up. And I've done a review of this book in the current issue of Street Spirit. You can read my take on it. Just grab a Street Spirit downtown, fork over a buck to a homeless person, or if you're homeless or poor yourself, you can probably get a free copy or at least look at one, and check it out at the library. And here's the author of that book talking to me about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months now. Let's check it out.
It's about 1:05 on January 28th, or is it the 27th? It's the 27th, Saturday afternoon. I'm out here on Geary Street at the secret location of San Francisco Liberation Radio, which in fact is none other than the home, catch this all you police officers, of Richard Edmondson. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Robert.
And you are a man of many skills. You're sitting at your computer here in this, looks like living room come radio station. You were one of the founders of San Francisco Liberation Radio. You were a stalwart for San Francisco Food Not Bombs. A man who lived in his vehicle for a number of years. You're a researcher. You're a writer. Just what aren't you, anyway?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a venture capitalist. Not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just kind of a jack of all trades.
And we're actually here about mid-afternoon, well, 1 o'clock or so, and in San Francisco on a kind of a sunny Saturday. And this is a station that's on the air how many hours a day?
We're on the air 7 hours a day. We go on the air each afternoon at 4 p.m., and then we're on until 11 each night, and except on Saturday nights we go to midnight.
And are you pretty much the man who's doing the station, or is it split with a number of people?
Well, no. I mean, we have some 30 to 40 DJs who come in here and do various programs. We also have like a board of directors, of which I'm only one member. There are, I think, 6 or 7 altogether. And the board makes all the like financial decisions involving the station. And we also have regular DJ meetings in which all the DJs get together and make decisions like, well, whether or not we want to do a fundraiser or whether we want to sort of support a protest. We recently adopted a proposal to endorse a moratorium on the death penalty, and we signed, that was something Equal Justice USA approached us about, and so all our DJs voted unanimously on that. I'm not by any means the sole means of support of the station.
How many people are actually involved with Free Radio in terms of say starting with the number of DJs, but then just adding, if you add everybody who's involved with the station, what do those numbers look like?
Yeah, is everybody that's involved with this station? We have about 30 to 40 DJs. We have, some of the programs that we have are hosted by like 2 or 3 DJs at one time, and then others, are just come in and do individual shows individually, but it's about 30 to 40.
And what percentage of your programming is in English?
Just about all of it, in fact. We used to have, and that's a shortcoming of our station, which I feel is certainly an inadequacy about our station. We used to have a program in Chinese, but the lady who was doing that quit, and we haven't been able to replace her yet, so we definitely need more programming in different languages.
Indeed, San Francisco, I mean, Santa Cruz, we of course have a Spanish language as a significant language by a number of people, but San Francisco is really a polyglot city. I mean, you have at least 4 major languages here, right? Tagalog, Spanish, Chinese, and English, right? And then there are dozens of others that are spoken by smaller groups of people.
Well, in this particular neighborhood here, Russian is widely spoken. We have a Russian Orthodox church just, you know, right down the street here, and that's kind of like made this neighborhood into sort of a hub of Russian-speaking people. But in this neighborhood, we definitely need a Chinese language program, and we definitely need a Russian language program. And
we put out an appeal in Chinese and Russian for any, say, expatriate Santa Cruzans who wish to step forward and parla paruski, or I'm not sure how you'd say it in Chinese.
That would be great, yeah.
The station has been on the air since 1993?
Yeah, since May 1st of 1993. That was our maiden broadcast.
And indeed, you are famous for roaming the hills in your truck to, should we say, one step ahead of the, well, what you feared was the FCC and the police, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we started out in, doing totally mobile broadcasting out of my truck, and we would drive it up to places like Potrero Hill or Twin Peaks and set up the antenna and turn the transmitter on and you know, broadcast for about 2 or 3 hours and then break down and go home. And we were doing this like, to start out with just once a week, and we sort of gradually expanded to twice a week. And then about 5 or 6 months after we went on the air, the FCC tracked me down one night while I was doing one of these mobile broadcasts.
As portrayed in your recent book, Rising Up, Class Warfare in America from the Streets to the Airwaves, which hopefully will be available in the Santa Cruz Public Library soon. You give a very kind of detailed account of what happened there, and I think you've also talked about this on the air as well.
Yeah, it was a kind of a strange night. I was in the back of my truck. It's a little motorhome camper type truck.
Truck that's parked in front of your home here?
Yeah, that one.
Hasn't been towed or hauled away? Huh?
No, not yet. It needs to be towed right now because it won't run. But
and you lived in this truck for a number of years.
I did.
In fact, as Rising Up documents, you were also one of the primary reasons you got involved with this free radio movement was because you felt that the what had happened to homeless people in San Francisco was simply not getting out through the mainstream media.
That's correct. I mean, people were having their their shopping carts taken, their belongings, their clothes, their sleeping bags,
their vehicles.
Their vehicles too. Yes. There's one famous case of a man who died one night in the bushes outside of the Haight Street McDonald's after having his sleeping bag and his prescription medicine taken by the cops earlier that evening.
I remember I was across the street doing video work with Coalition on Homelessness several days before. They ticketed me for being in the park.
That's not surprising. They were doing a lot of that back then, and this gentleman died after having this sort of tragic, you know, encounter with the police. And this is the sort of thing that was going on, and, you know, not to mention the whole outrage of arresting people for serving food to homeless people, which you well know about that. And so we decided that, you know, things that were going on back then were like the city was saying, well, Food Not Bombs just refuses to get a permit. They just refused to apply for a permit, and the city would tell these lies, not only to the media, but they would tell them to judges, federal judges.
And get away with them.
And get away with it. There's, you know, one famous case quoted in my book with Deputy City Attorney Paula Jessen went before Federal Judge Andrew Schwartzer and said, Your Honor, we've tried and tried, but they just refused to get a permit. And so we felt like, we, you know, one thing we wanted to do with the radio station was to focus on this whole issue of, you know, how outrageous it, not only how outrageous it is to be arresting people for serving food, but also to expose some of these lies that the city was telling.
How successful have you been? Now, I noticed this book, which you self-published after apparently getting dissed by numerous publishers whose names we shall not mention. You go into some detail about Food Not Bombs. I know I worked for a number of years doing flyers for Food Not Bombs and compiling archives. Keith McHenry, one of the main co-founder of Food Not Bombs and one of the main targets of the police around Food Not Bombs, was his computer was constantly breaking down. He was losing his archives, and we were always having trouble doing that. And I think some of the stuff is still stored down in Santa Cruz, but there was a problem getting information out to the public, though occasionally you get a good story, one or two stories. Mostly it was this mythology, as it often is with free radio, that permits are just not being applied for by these anarchistic pirates who just want to snub their, turn their noses up and give the finger to authority, and they're all about acting in an adolescent, rebellious fashion without any substance involved. The truth, however, is quite different, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the truth was certainly a lot different between, you know, in the case of Food Not Bombs, in the case of Free Radio, of course, you know, the FCC has opened up these filing windows and thousands of people have filed applications.
But not for urban areas, correct? There's no way to get a radio station in San Francisco here. Is that a correct understanding?
Under the rules that they have passed, there is no way of getting a radio station here in San Francisco. However, we have filed an application and requested a waiver on that rule. We actually have two applications pending with the FCC. But getting back to Food Not Bombs, though, I mean, there was a whole... the city was saying, oh, they just refused to apply for a permit, but the reality was that Food Not Bombs members were spending literally hundreds of hours meeting with city officials in negotiations and putting in their time for free, while city officials, of course, were being paid for having all these meetings and so forth. So this claim made by the city that, oh, we've tried to work with Food Not Bombs and they just refused to apply for a permit, that was just an outright fabrication. And you know, again, one which, you know, we felt like we wanted to address on the radio. And it was one of the reasons why we put this radio station on the air.
And one of the reasons you wrote this book, which in quite systematic detail goes into the history of the Food Not Bombs struggled to get a permit, and indeed it did get a permit for a period of time in 1989 and 90. It had kind of month-to-month permits, and then of course the entire permit process was removed by Parks and Rec in the summer of 1990. So actually, it's still the case, as I understand it, that it is illegal. You can't get a permit to serve free food in a park. Is that still the case?
My understanding is that to serve food for groups of 25 or more, it's illegal to do that in a city park. But, I mean, they bend the rules every year when they have this, what is it, they call it Park a la Mode, and they have all these restaurants come out to the park and set up tents and serve food. So, I mean, it seems to be applied very selectively.
Similar to how, in, let's say, Santa Cruz, it's illegal to serve food except in a certified kitchen. This is the other thing that has been used statewide to go after food servers under the state codes. They have to have a certified kitchen. They went after Food Not Bombs and Swap, Soup Without a Permit, Eaters in Santa Cruz in 1989, claiming that we didn't have a certified kitchen, which is, of course, a restaurant kitchen. It's three sinks and so forth. But, of course, their own interface satellite shelter program, the city's own satellite shelter program, which every night makes food for the people that comes there, they don't have certified kitchens. And I also... They violate the city's own camping ban law because they aren't domiciles. I mean, they, of course, as you pointed out, they stretch their laws and ignore laws for themselves. But for outlaw groups, of course, or for groups they don't, disfavored groups is the way to put it, they act differently. On the other hand, Liberation Radio is sort of a haven for some disfavored groups, so I doubt you have any Nazis who broadcast from the station.
No, we don't have any Nazis.
So you exercise censorship, eh, Richard Edmondson?
Yeah. I mean, I freely admit that we would not allow a Nazi or KKK member to come on this.
How about a Republican?
A Republican, that might be, you know, stretching it a little bit, but possibly we would have a Republican.
Libertarian?
Yeah, we've actually had libertarians on before.
Natural Rights Party.
Don't know much about them, so we've never had any of them on.
So, in fact, of course, the reason in Santa Cruz, the collective has the same philosophy. They don't want hate speech, as they put it. The number of rules that sometimes bother me about, I mean, I've had a Nazi on my show, for instance, a homeless Nazi, to talk about, you know, that perspective. But, you know, it's not like he's got a regular forum to push his particular point of view. But there is a way that anybody who wants to get a transmitter can, for a relatively small amount, do so, set one up, and begin broadcasting, though at the risk of potential harassment, though indeed there hasn't been too much harassment in California, except of, I guess, Free Radio Berkeley. And I guess you yourself did close down for a while after an unfavorable court decision in 1998, but theoretically, other stations have not been harassed, other than, I mean, they've been harassed by people going to the landlord and so forth, but you actually haven't had stations where SWAT teams come in, grab the equipment, as has happened in Florida, and what, is in Illinois, I think, was also another place that happened.
Yeah, that's well, it happened recently in Springfield, Illinois. Austin, Texas, was, Free Radio Austin was raided by a SWAT team twice. ice and had all their equipment taken. But no, we've not had that sort of attack against us here. There have been a couple of cases of a couple of different radio micro stations in San Francisco whose landlords were approached by the FCC, who made some sort of comments to the landlords, and the landlords went and shut down the radio station.
Don't be fooled by the intro music, folks. It's Bathurst Spears Broadside. It's March 15, 2001. 2 hours of civil rights in Santa Cruz coming at you. California at 96.3 FM for the next 2 hours. As soon as I catch my breath, hang with me and let's do some civil rights talking and maybe some walking. That would be even better than talking, wouldn't it? We're going to have special guests tonight, Veronica and Kiko, who spoke at City Council on Tuesday night at the Oral Communications Section, 7 o'clock. Some of you who are regulars may have listened to that show. Others who don't want to waste your time with City Council, and I can quite sympathize with that, may have missed it. There were a number of people who spoke about police misconduct. They weren't organized, they weren't orchestrated, they weren't dragged in by me or anybody else. They just happened to show up. And I guess we're going to pursue that subject even further on Sunday when the show returns. We do two shows a week, for those of you who are new. One is Sunday from 11 to 1:30 in the afternoon. The other is on Thursdays today, and every Thursday, 6 to 8 in the evening here on 96.3. Our call-in number, in case you want to reach us, and we do encourage you to call in, 427-3772, 427-3772, easy number to remember, and we'll keep trying to put it out there in case you don't remember it. If you want to reach us off-air, it's 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is the headquarters for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HUFF, but it's also where the producer of this show is sitting fielding calls in case you want to talk about stuff off-air that you're a little bit uncomfortable talking about on the air, or you want to first kind of set the scene, or possibly you have some messages you want to pass on without being public at this particular point about them. So, before we get into our guests who are here, we may even get another guest coming up. There's another speaker from the City Council meeting of last Tuesday who was concerned about police misconduct who may show up. But we at least have two folks who I think I'm really glad to see here, Kiko and Veronica. Before I introduce them, though, I'm going to play a little bit of an interview that happened this... Well, the interview happened just an hour ago, but the incident that provoked it was the, shall we say, the demolition of the statue of Christopher Columbus over in San Jose. I think that was on Thursday. A man who's admitted demolishing it, Jim Costner, local activist, went to court this morning, and he's now being defended by attorney Larry Hildes. And we had an interview with Larry. We're going to play that interview now, and then we're going to launch into live on-air discussion of police conduct in Santa Cruz. We're going to have two folks discussing their concerns about that. But first, a little bit about Jim Costner, who is currently in jail on $50,000 bail over in San Jose. Hi, it is March 15th, about 5:10 in the afternoon, on the line with attorney Larry Hildes, also activist Larry Hildes. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Robert.
And you came all the way down from Berkeley to San Jose today to help a man named Jim Costner. Who's Jim and what's happening?
Well, Jim was arrested. Jim is a longtime activist in Santa Cruz on a variety of issues, Indian rights issues, homeless issues, and so on. Was arrested last Thursday. He decided to do some redecorating to a statue of Columbus.
Uh-huh.
He was offended that there was a statue of Columbus at San Jose City Hall, such a public building, and took a sledgehammer to it and did quite significant damage. Frankly, a couple more blows and it looks like he would have knocked the head off, along with the legs and one arm and part of a hand.
But the spirit of Columbus lives on.
Yes.
Wasn't Columbus this famous conquistador who wiped out, 1 to 3 million, he and his, I guess, his son, and I guess the man after him, in the course of 60 or 70 years, the entire population of Hispaniola was eliminated?
That is correct. Great hero.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's good if you need a depopulation expert, call in Christopher. I mean, they didn't have the atomic bomb in those days.
It's amazingly efficient for the Spanish were quite, who sent him, were quite good at genocide by that point.
Oh, and so he also, I understand, exported Native American slaves back to Europe. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And this is exactly the kind of thing we want to talk about. Apparently, they have his bail at $50,000, which is basically murder and serial rapist bail. And the DA was arguing today that it should be higher. She said that they were getting a great deal of pressure from concerned citizens who were offended by what he had done and claiming that he had done $150,000 worth of damage to the statue. Frankly, I don't think the statue was worth $150,000.
Uh-huh. Well, I understand. I read somewhere, I guess it was the Mercury News, that they're going to try to redo the statue or patch it up and move it somewhere else.
That is apparently the plan.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I went in this morning in front of Judge Stafford to try and get the bail reduced down to a reasonable level so we could get Jim out. And I announced my purpose, and the judge responded by saying, I set the bail. It's what I think it should be.
And did he give any explanation for this? I mean,
no.
Did you have cases in point to indicate that? I guess he's charged with felony vandalism and felony second-degree burglary. Are those the two charges?
That is correct. And the felony vandalism, ironically, is with a hate crime enhancement. I want to know who this group is, who this oppressed group is, who he's supposed to be directing hate to.
Well, maybe war criminals and genocidal murderers are in a sense, an endangered group, and he is attacking the, you know, a particular group of much maligned individuals. Although Columbus is, I guess, occasionally maligned, but usually he's revered, right?
Which is one of those bizarre things that the victors get to make the history.
Now, was this some sort of sinister... are they alleging this was a sinister conspiracy where...
No.
He was slipped a sledgehammer and, you know, he was... What's the...
Basically, they are saying that he's crazy and therefore dangerous.
Or they claim that he's a psychiatric case or that he's crazy but cold-blooded and...
Right, all of that. Apparently, he gave an interview to the police, which they videotaped, which we have not seen yet, and which, frankly, I had kept his mouth shut, and talked a lot about God and genocide, and they decided, because he believed so strongly in this, that he must be crazy.
Hmm.
After all, Columbus was a hero, wasn't he? Anybody who would sledgehammer a statue of Columbus must be crazy.
Well, he is one of our conquistador heroes, if you want to consider... I guess if you want to consider the Nazi pantheon, the Führer himself would be considered quite a hero.
Yes.
Within his own circle, of course.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And we're going to try and narrow the circle. We're not going to argue that Jim didn't do it. He did it. He's proud of having done it. We can't really argue necessity because Columbus is dead. Basically, what we're going to do is put Columbus on trial. And we're going to try and explain to a jury how offensive this is.
You think the judge, is your trial judge going to be the judge that sets the bail?
No, he's gone. I told him I was going to remove him from the case, and he said, I'm not going to hear it anymore anyway.
Uh-huh.
But he's gone.
So is there a chance of getting a new bail hearing before a new judge?
Monday. Monday at 1:30, we have a bail hearing. We're going to have a press conference at 1 o'clock. I dictated about half the press release to the support person. We need a packed courtroom. Anybody who can get over the hill, we need people there.
This is Monday at what time?
1:30. Monday the 19th at 1:30. We don't know what the department will be. We will be meeting out front at 1 o'clock. We'll go into Department 23, which is in the basement of the new building, and they will send us somewhere else.
And this is in San Jose. I guess I would encourage people, if you want instructions on how to get to this San Jose courthouse, give a call to HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Larry, what penalties does Jim Costner face?
Well, he cannot be sentenced for both the burglary and the vandalism, because the vandalism is an element of the burglary. He can only be sentenced for one or up for the other, but potentially 3 years in prison.
And
they could try to make him pay the cost of the stupid statue.
Uh-huh. Is there much public sentiment you've talked to? I mean, do people sort of snarl and spit at you as you walk down the street, Larry, once they've learned you're taking this case? Or they shake your hand, congratulate you? I've had several people who I didn't know, really, who didn't know Jim Costner, look at this press release and say, right on, Jim. What's the reaction you've been hearing?
Well, I haven't gotten much yet. This is the first time I've appeared in the case. I will be in the Mercury News tomorrow, as presumably will Jim. They had a reporter there. I did go over to the scene of the crime.
To catch the debris of the Columbus statue, and what did you see?
Well, there were a couple of bunches of flowers there, but I also stood there for a while and tried to hear what people were saying. Didn't hear much. A lot of people just didn't understand it or thought it was really funny. There were a couple of people who were just mortally offended.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think most people understood it, and that's going to be our job over the course of the time between now and the trial. And then during the trial, is to make people understand exactly why he did it and why it was appropriate.
How can people help, Jim? You suggested they show up at 1:30 on Monday. I guess it's the, looks like the 18th?
19th,
thank you.
Yes. That would be a very big help. Money is always helpful, especially if we're trying to get him out. If they don't reduce his bail, we have to get him out of there. it makes the whole case more difficult, and it makes his situation much more dangerous if he's in there. He's identified white supremacists on the, you know, in the area with him, and it would just be better all around to get him.
You mean by that, white supremacists who might do him some danger?
That would be my concern, yeah.
Uh-huh.
He's in very good spirits, but he would be in a lot better spirits if we had him out. There's always, you know, money for logistical stuff related to the suit. We're going to need witnesses. We're going to need experts who can talk about Columbus and about genocide of Native Americans. A lot of stuff like that we're going to need. The biggest thing we need initially is people to show up, though. We want to fill the courtroom.
Uh-huh.
We want it to be clear to whatever judge hears this case on Monday that he has support. Because they have made it clear, both the judge and the DA made it very clear, that they are getting a lot of pressure from the Italian-American groups that put the statue up, demanding that he basically be hung.
Hmm.
And they keep demanding his bail be higher. The DA's office was threatening to demand $100,000 bail.
I see. Hang him high, hang him higher, eh?
Yes.
So, I guess, where can people send money?
I guess they can send it to... Much as I always hate to do this, they can send it to my office. I don't know what the support, what the local contact information for him is at this point.
Well, why don't we give your office and hope that you will not be filching his checks?
I am honor-bound not to do that. My office address is 1840 Woolsey Street, W-O-O-L-S-E-Y, in Berkeley, 94703. Either make the checks out to him or make them out to me and notate in the note box for Jim Costner.
C-O-S-N-E-R?
C-O-S-N-E-R, and they will go to his case. They will not go to anything else.
And if any local support persons for the Costner Defense Fund are listening...
Because that's the one thing in that room that nobody would say. Did you notice that?
That one guy wanted to say something about some letter, Fitzmaurice. You know, I don't want his name on any kind of Green Party letter. I've been a Green Party member for 25 years. Also, they have some tenants here that are more like peace and freedom instead of Green Party. They don't have anything, any... You know, the Green Party would still be nowhere if they didn't stand up and say things loud, forcefully, for many years.
Right. Well, see, that's why it's so ironic. It's, again, you know, at the national level, they're willing to say Democrats and Republicans, it's the same old crap, let's have something different. But you get here locally, and suddenly you're supposed to play ball with the local politicians in order to get on the agenda and to have, you know, maximum loving understanding and all this kind of stuff.
Sure. It's just like, well, you know, we didn't elect that Dick Wilson, but, you know, he's telling them all what they can and can't do, what is... possible, you know. Well, I know all these people have these, and we'd all like to do this, but, you know, this just isn't fiscally possible.
Doug, I'd like to have you...
I can say that.
Doug, I'd like to have you on the air next time,
sure.
Actually. I mean, really on the air. If you want to come into the studio, we can actually give you some more time to talk.
Yeah, they didn't want to have anybody talk. Yeah, they didn't want to have the working group of y'all to talk much longer.
No,
well,
they spent a lot of time intimidating us before this whole thing happened, and I think, ironically and sadly, they weren't even aware that that's what they were doing. So we're going to talk more about this, and hopefully we'll have more of this man, this man who wants to see the green stand up and be green, on Thursday from 6 to 8 when we come back.
Sure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's about it, almost. We have another 2 or 3 minutes left for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We did get a message about the arrest of Jim Costner. Just Man Jim is an activist who has been fighting the sleeping ban for some time. He was arrested on Thursday or Friday in San Jose, according to a report from a woman who shall remain anonymous. She was reading, actually, from the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday. Jim is accused of attacking a statue of Christopher Columbus with something like a sledgehammer. This is in the San Jose City Hall. A passerby supposedly was heard him to have said, according to the Chronicle, Christopher Columbus was a culprit in the biggest genocide this world has experienced. He was arrested for felony vandalism, and I believe may still be in jail, as well as damaging a public art. He goes to court, I believe, on Monday in San Jose. I don't have the exact time for this. He apparently, whoever did this was finished, the statue was missing a right arm, both legs, and there was only a cape connecting its torso to the podium. That's also, I want to point out that tomorrow, Monday, is not only the Monday morning group at 8 o'clock at Baker Square on the sleeping band, but at 6:30 the Mumia group meets. So that's another thing coming up. And on Wednesday at 7 o'clock, the Direct Action Network, concerned with Vandenberg and the whatever NAFTA's new big brother or little sister or whatever you will is, the Free Trade Association of the Americas, perhaps, that's meeting at 7 p.m. In the Resource Center for Nonviolence. I want to thank you for being with us here on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Remind you, 6 o'clock on Thursday, come back. Want to get to us in between times. Run into me at probably the Citizens Police rah-rah board at 5:30 on Monday, or the City Council meeting, 7 o'clock on Monday. Even if the mainstream advocates choose not to speak, I may still be updating the council on what I think is really going on. I want to thank the Little Red Hen for showing up on time, and so I don't have to fumble with all these tapes and look for her show. And please stay with her. She's got some stuff for you to hear. Thanks for being with me.
When she danced on the waters and the wind was her horn, the lady laughed and everything was born. When she met the sun and the light gave him birth, the lord of the dance then appeared on the earth. Dance then wherever you may be, for I am the lord of the dance and me. Wherever you may be, and I'll lead you all in the dancing bee. I danced in the morning when the world was begun. I danced in the moon and the stars and the sun. Called from the darkness by the song of the earth, I joined in the singing and she gave me birth. Dance then, wherever you may be, for I am the lord of the dancing bee. And I'll lead you all wherever you may be, and I'll lead you all in the dancing bee.
Okay, CPRB, March 12th, 2001, 525, or thereabouts.
Introduce two new board members, David Rowan, who is appointed by Mark Klimak, and Brent Faust, who's appointed by Emily Nyland. Welcome, both have come through the initial orientation and are full-fledged members. Want to call the roll?
Board member David Brown?
Yep.
Board member Jim King?
Present.
Board member Brent House?
Present.
Board member Sandra Brown? Board member Becky Black?
Here.
Sandra is here. Vice Chair Tony Barrera?
Here.
And Chair Arnold Black?
Are there changes to the agenda? Reorder the leading items on the agenda.
We have been asked by the audience if we could move oral communications down a ways, since there are two people coming that would like to speak at oral communications but weren't able to make the 5:30 deadline.
Actually, one of them has arrived and the other isn't coming, so I think
okay.
We can proceed.
Okay,
never mind. Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Okay. Minutes of February 12th meeting. Need a motion to approve, or are there any changes?
I'm looking at that. Minutes to approve.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Mr. Norris.
Yes, I wanted to just mention with respect to these minutes that I really appreciate the extensive and detailed treatment, particularly of the public input. I think it makes the public feel that there's a point in speaking even if we feel the board isn't listening and responding, that some record is being kept of what's being said. And while I'm often critical of what the board does, I do appreciate it that there is a record being made, and thank you very much, and I quickly thank whoever did these minutes, and I suspect it's the person over here.
Any other comments? All in favor of approving the minutes as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are passed unanimously. Oral communications, this is a time set aside for the public to address the board on any item not on the agenda. So whoever would like wishes to address the board on items not on the agenda, please step up.
Is this board
saying
the
pledge of allegiance to the flag? No, we don't. But you, we have not been doing that.
Internal affairs of all mankind. You don't have to even look like this. But there is one. Mental problems, and they're going to really start hating and enjoying. you very much. His house, and I pulled in, and I seen. I will protect and serve all of humanity with respect and dignity for everyone, and I suggest the police department does it too. Thank you. Should have heard the rest of it. It gets better.
Any other individuals to speak?
Good evening. I'm Becky Johnson. And welcome to the two new members of the Police Review Board. I want to talk tonight about the important task that the Citizens Police Review Board has, I believe, thus far neglected, and that is making recommendations about policies at the Santa Cruz Police Department. And I want to talk about four different areas that I hope in the future that you will address these policies. The first one, which was mentioned by the last speaker, is about the drug war and how it plays out here in Santa Cruz. The second issue I want to discuss is the use of alcohol stings, the recent shoulder tap law, the use of minors in those stings. The third issue I want to talk about also has to do with the alcohol outlets and that there's been excessive or monitoring of alcohol, the vendors in the city, and there have been some concerns about how that's been conducted. And the fourth issue I'd like to talk about are stings for prostitution that I think have inherently some human rights violations involved. My concern about the drug war is that all research data does indicate that treatment and education are the most effective approaches to reducing or eliminating drug abuse. The incarceration model is far too costly. It stigmatizes those who are arrested and convicted of drug possession, use, or sales. It prevents those people from being able to get employed. It prevents them from being able to get into housing. It increases homelessness on our streets. It prevents people who are currently homeless from getting their lives back together. It disrupts families, causing huge costs of sums of money and stress on families, and children suffer greatly when their parents are incarcerated and separated for long periods of time, something those children are undoubtedly not responsible for. It costs a great deal of time and money with lawyers, courts, and police department resources, which should be wisely used in any case. I'm also concerned in the drug war about the harassment of medical marijuana patients who should be able to use medical marijuana effectively without fear of being arrested or cited. The second issue I want to talk about is this alcohol sting using minors. I'm just concerned. It bothers me that minors are used both with this new shoulder tap law, a law, by the way, that isn't against the law in any other city. It's our brand new law that is kind of another one of these make-work activities on the part of the police department. I just question the ethical use of using these minor decoys to entice people into purchasing alcohol for them and then arresting them should they succumb. Third issue, it's about the monitoring of the bars. I know I've heard testimony from bar owners here saying that that they were really had a number of concerns about how they've been treated with police cars parked in front of their bars for hours at a time, where they, as regular business owners, are supposed to report if there are any crimes occurring in that block that they're on that they are aware of or their customers inform them about, and yet when they make that report to the police department, it goes on a record, and that record is held against them later on. I think you need to make a policy statement about these practices, because these practices are inherently unjust, and they must be ended, and they shouldn't be charged against an individual officer. It's obviously a policy of the Santa Cruz Police Department. And the fourth issue, which is a great concern to me as a mother, as a woman, as the mother of a daughter, and that is the stings for prostitution, where we are asking female officers to dress up in sexually provocative clothing and go down into areas of our city that have been known to have prostitution and to entice and entrap. From what the reports I have, they were very poor Mexican men who are far away from their homes and families and their wives and their girlfriends working in this country. And these stings are conducted right around payday when these men get their payment, and they're offered to have sex with beautiful women for $40. And they catch them by the dozen in these sting operations, and they are disgusting. And it's disgusting that we ask our female police officers to degrade themselves in this way as part of their employment. So these four issues are great concern to me, and since this board has never, to my knowledge, addressed a single policy issue of the Santa Cruz Police Department's 5-year history, I think long past time, and I would be willing to file that complaint as a policy situation if that would facilitate this. Thank you.
Some of us have done bad things in the past, but it doesn't allow the police department to be able to do that kind of thing. I mean, yes, people do bad things in that area, and bad things do happen, but it shouldn't penalize everyone who's there.
I would encourage you to come out that complaint. I would also encourage you to have anybody else who has similar complaints file a complaint, because that's the only way for everyone to be able to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to say something just for the record. I mean, I may have made mistakes on the names of officers who I was thought to, you know, be there, but that is only because I was refused information. I can't, you know, be completely certain when I'm asking someone their name and they're cursing at me and walking away, when it's a city official, someone, it's their job to give me their name and their badge number when I ask for it. And when I'm refused that information, it makes it a little bit difficult to find out who, and I wanted to apologize to the officers who maybe I did get their names wrong or faces wrong, but it doesn't get away from what happened to me.
If you would just mention in the complaint that you weren't sure of the names of the officers, we usually can find out who the officers were. So that's not a problem for us.
I also wanted to say that I think that the police department could have been a little bit more helpful on the situation instead of just sending. When I went to court, they did send one officer there who I believe was, I'd call maybe a decoy or some sort of, I don't even know what to say about that, but I'd like to see something happen about this, and I'm not going to stop until I do.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
The people that you are with, are they, are you listed as witnesses on the complaint?
I listed one. I don't think that he'd come, because a lot of people just, I mean, you'd be surprised how many of these being in the park after hours tickets are given to people in the Beach Flats area. And people just say, you know, oh well, I might as well pay it. There's nothing we can do about it. We go and tell them that we didn't do it, but people, we go to the courtroom, which is not even, I mean, I'm sure he's a real judge, but it's not a jury. It's not someone who's sitting there listening to every word you have to say and questioning the police officers. I told the judge what happened to me, and he said, officer, is this true? Well, yeah. But it still didn't stop anything. Didn't make anything change. That's another thing. It's not even, well, it's a basketball court. In front of the community center.
How many other people have told you personally that this happened?
I have another person who I had to speak with. And she went to court and her case was thrown out due to, how can I say this? He kind of used his power wrong, I'm guessing. One of the officers that was also there the night of the incident that happened to me.
One other person?
I've heard from many other people, though. It wasn't just, the night of my incident, there was three people there. It was three of us laying on the ground at 12 o'clock at night.
And one other person said that, this had happened to them also?
But, I mean, it's happened to many people that I know. I can't give you a number.
How do you know that?
From talking to people, that's where I live, that's where I've lived all of my life, it's what I've seen all my life. You see things happen, but nobody can say anything because maybe most of the time they are doing something wrong, but that doesn't excuse the behavior of an officer. When someone is doing wrong, there's guidelines that you need to follow, policies that need to be followed. You can't just do anything you want. Why, oh, that's the drug dealer, I can do that to him anyway because he's doing something wrong. That doesn't justify their behavior.
Besides this one incident, have you ever seen this happen yourself to anyone else?
Yes, I have.
How many times?
I probably couldn't count them on my fingers.
What were the rude comments?
Can I curse?
Sure can.
shut your fucking mouth. You talk too goddamn much. Your big fucking mouth is gonna have you go to jail tonight. Just repetitive comments like that. I also have a question. When will I receive some kind of...
That's hard to tell. It'll probably be at least a couple of months. It usually takes about 60 days, sometimes longer, to complete the investigation.
And while the investigation is going on, would I be... am I still going to have to... Like, they sent me things saying that I was going to have to pay this fine, and I refuse to pay that.
We really don't have any control over that.
So I'd have to go through the court and appeal that?
The court process.
Well, thank you for listening to me.